Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Coffee Party Radio on Blog Talk. This is Debbie Lynn Molyneux calling in from Portland, Oregon today. Janine is off traveling, so thank you everyone for joining us here. We're experiencing some beautiful weather in the Great Northwest, and I'm excited to have a great guest today as we talk about sustainable living. You know, just a brief opening to kind of set the tone for the day. You know, there's so much out there we could be talking about in politics, and I just want to recognize that, you know, the Syria diplomacy thing that happened last week, it was going on where, you know, we played good cop, bad cop with Russia over Syria, and there's the whole debt ceiling debate going on, and the whole holding Obamacare hostage so that we get the national budget passed, and then there's the whole shooting in Washington, D.C., and as I kind of look through all the topics that we could actually talk about on Lunch with Loudon today, I just got really, really sick to my stomach because all of this is so divisive and how and so partisan. And I couldn't find a way through it that wasn't going to be like building a future that I really wanted to live in. It was just more of the same old, different day, same battles going on. And so I was kind of talking about this a little bit with Janine, and then while she's off traveling, and then I was talking with my friend Kate, who's our guest today, and you know, Kate and I are working on this other project about, you know, creating sustainability for the planet and for people as we live locally, and I really thought, you know, this would be a much more hopeful topic to talk about on Coffee Party because not only are we looking at something that we want to live into in the future, but it's also more about not letting the moneyed influences in politics as we know them to be actually dictate how we live our day-to-day lives. It's actually more about empowering ourselves to do what we can do in the moment as we live every day. So I, with that in mind and with the backdrop of, yes, we know all these other things are happening in Washington, D.C. and in our states, and we'll bring some of those topics in as we talk today. But we really wanted to do a show today about empowering ourselves, finding solutions, and building a future that we wanted to live into. So with that intro, I'm going to bring Kate Wildrick in. And Kate is with Ingenuity Innovation Center in St. Helens, Oregon. It's about an hour outside of Portland. And she was a guest with Janine. Her and her partner, Aaron, were on with Janine back in April talking about their aquaponics farm and how we can grow food that is GMO-free. So I just want to welcome you back to the show, Kate.
Thank you so much for having me.
And so give us a little the little quick background for those people who haven't, who didn't listen to the earlier show, and tell us then, you know, what's been going on with Ingenuity since then.
Sure. Well, for those of you who don't know who we are and what we're doing, we have focused in on putting our resources into creating a space where we can discover what it takes to live sustainably. And we have 20 acres out here in St. Helens, Oregon, and this has been a family project endeavor because with the economic downturn, we saw a lot of our friends and certainly family members become impacted with the downturn and looking at what are their options, where are they going to go, how are they going to retire, and Aaron and I sat down and talked about, you know, what are our next steps. So we talked to his family members and said, why don't we pull our resources together and look at getting a parcel of land with two homes where we can come together and create a family-owned and operated business that focuses around sustainable solutions. So we moved in to this wonderful place last September, and since then, we have built a 1,500-square-foot greenhouse that focuses on creating wonderful organic GMO-free produce where we have the merger of fish and vegetables in our aquaponic system. And we've been looking at employing different renewable energy solutions and creating all sorts of other wonderful things to help us reduce our footprint.
Yeah, thanks, Kate. That's a great introduction to what you all are doing out there in St. Helens. And just want to give a shout-out to Ray Curtis. I know you know Ray as well, and I met Ray through Coffee Party, and I just want to give a shout-out to Ray who's listening in. One of the things that we talked about a lot last time you were on the show was this thing about growing organic and GMO-free foods through aquaponics. But that's just, you know, one part of your overall sustainability plan. And can you give us like a little, what are you growing? What actually are you growing in your greenhouse right now?
Well, this has been a really big R&D process for us. So we've been taking a look at what kind of vegetables actually grow well in a system like this. You know, we have the tanks where we are growing tilapia. And as tilapia do their business in the water, the water is pumped up into the grow beds. So we've been experimenting with tomatoes and cucumbers, watermelon, all sorts of different peppers, jalapenos, basil, sage, mint. I mean, anything that you can kind of imagine in the culinary world, we're trying to see how it grows. We've learned that some produce grows better than others. But we're astounded, you know, overall is just how much comes out of this system. It's unbelievable where normally in the ground we have another raised bed kind of as our sample to showcase, you know, same kinds of vegetables that we're growing in the system. They're like knee-high, and in the greenhouse we're having to get a 10-foot ladder out to harvest tomatoes. It's insane.
Well, the grow beds for the aquaponics units are waist high, so getting the 10-foot ladder out means that these plants are growing 6 and 7 foot tall from waist high.
Yes,
is that accurate?
That's about
accurate.
To give people
the scale of it. So they're not growing at ground level up, but they are growing from waist high up. And I think you guys had done some numbers, too, about how many pounds of tomatoes. I know the tomatoes taste awesome because I've had those in salads out at your place. But you had done some calculations, too, about, like, how many pounds of food or how many people you could feed out of the greenhouse in a year.
Yeah, we've learned that two of those beds can actually feed a person for a year. So that's pretty impressive because we are often sold the notion that it takes, you know, 1 acre of land to, you know, feed just a couple of people. So we're really excited about the potential of just, you know, how even the tomato plants can grow year-round. It's not just a seasonal thing. They'll stay going strong for about 12 months. And then our cucumber plants have just been insane where we have just one in there, and we've already harvested probably around – I think 40 plus, you know, cucumbers off of there. So
wow,
that's pretty impressive. So we're just starting to bring it to market now because we planted these plants on June 1st, and we're adding in two additional aquaponic rows. So you know, the abundance is amazing. We're working on getting the measures and metrics in place, but it's unlike anything that our little raised bed outside is producing.
Right, yeah. So just to give people kind of a scale of this, the plant beds, the aquaponics beds are like 4 foot by 4 foot square, and they're about 12 inches deep, 14 inches deep. And so two of those is producing the same amount of food that 1 acre of dirt can produce.
Yes.
Okay. So I just wanted to give people, literally, people could put these in their backyard or in their basement in an urban setting and grow food to feed themselves.
And that's what we've been really excited about because we're working on some new kits that we're looking to bring to market because there's been folks that come out here to see what it is we're doing. And they're like, Kate and Aaron, how can I incorporate this into my life? Because this is just amazing that, you know, with very little maintenance and little time out of my day, I can have access to fresh, organic, GMO-free produce and protein that's, you know, very little effort that I have to put into it.
So how has this have you put this into your own personal sustainability plan? Like, what is your overall plan for your lifestyle sustainability?
Well, that's an interesting thing. I mean, when we were kind of taking a look back about even like the politics of food here, you know, we know that food is one of those cornerstones for health and well-being. And digging into this, we saw a lot of our phytochemicals that we're missing from food that are essential to our body's, you know, ability to do its best. And we figured that if we were going to pull together with this land and have our family here to start shifting into doing what, number one, we love to do, food was a critical component to that. So it was kind of our healthcare plan. You know, one of those important things that just by growing our own food, we had an idea and control over, like, where is it coming from? We understand, like, you know, from a farm to fork principle, you know, all of the different steps that it goes through. And, you know, best yet, we can also communicate with others how that works. So mm-hmm. we thought, you know, just starting out with food was an important piece, but it's branched off into all these other areas. And I know that you've been out here several times to take a look at some of the projects that we're working on. But and as you know, we've had wonderful power outages that have been plaguing us because they're putting in new power lines. So it then began the whole discussion around here of what is it that we can do with wind and solar, for example, and also battery backup systems to just make sure that our fan goes on in the greenhouse and that, you know, our heaters for our fish with, you know, because tilapia, like warmer waters, are able to survive in case we're not here and the power goes out. So
right.
We saw lots of different applications in that regard, just even to our homes and, you know, things that we can be doing around here to reduce our footprint as well.
Mm-hmm. So how has this impacted, like, your relationships with your with the local community and maybe the local elected officials? Because, this is something that not everybody goes out and just buys a farm and starts setting up their own sustainable life.
No, it's not. But the one thing I think that's been really astounding to me, because I am just such a people person, is that it really becomes a great place to connect. Food is always such a great recipe for connection. Everybody has their favorite recipe or is triggered by a family memory that they've had over something that they eat, and also the different times of the seasons. As fruits come in or as it's, you know, springtime and just seeing everything kind of come alive in the whole garden. So it's become a connection point for our community to come out and just learn, you know, these hidden arts of even how to prepare food. We've certainly moved in a lifestyle of just being so on the go that we become disconnected about where our food comes from and even how it impacts our local communities. So we've done a lot of showcasing and focus on how just buying local can really improve the lives of everyone around us on a local basis. Some people have chickens, for example, where they're growing and selling eggs. And we can show when you buy from this local person here how much of a difference it makes in their lives by being able to, you know, keep the money in the community. It helps impact the health and well-being of their family. And then even if they're specializing in eggs and we're specializing in celery, for example, we have a way to trade back and forth. So it keeps money and resources inside of our community and, you know, also helps eliminate people driving to Portland, which, again, you mentioned is about 50, you know, minutes away to go into some of the big box stores.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yes, it. This idea of local resiliency, I know, has been a really big as we move towards what people are thinking is going to be peak oil, and the downside of that, where we're actually going to have to wean ourselves off of fossil fuels. That idea of local resiliency sounds like it's really coming into play as part of the sustainability plan at the farm. And I picked up on that. I mean, one of the things you and I've talked about a lot is, like, how do we bring a lot of the ideas that you're doing, the research and development to that you're doing the R&D work out at the farm, how do we bring that back to the urban setting and help people see how they can build their sustainable lifestyle in an urban setting. Because you're like, I don't really want to live on a farm. I want to live in a city. And what have you seen, and how do you recognize like the needs to be different or the same between rural and urban settings?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. Again, I had the wonderful opportunity of owning and operating a town in Central Oregon, but it was in a very, very remote area in Wheeler County on the John Day River, Service Creek, population 2. And I got to see a really big urban and rural divide there. A lot of the locals were trying to figure out how did they bring in tourism or businesses that are kind of off the beaten path. And it came back down to those basic needs. How do we get our basic needs met? And I'm seeing this common theme just show up again and again, regardless of whether you live in an urban or rural environment. You know, time is precious. And I think that one of the things, you know, that at least I'm seeing just with our, you know, the cost of everything go up, is that we're being a lot more mindful about where we put our energy and resources into things. So sustainability offers a way, especially when we're, you know, building local connections, to kind of think creatively. And that, I think, opens up a lot of doors for us to have discussions of like, well, you know, for example, with energy, is we're figuring out ways in our greenhouse to have redundant, you know, power systems. How might that apply to different, you know, urban applications? And this becomes a wonderful place for us to have some of those conversations about, you know, what would that look and feel like? And, oh, by the way, we already have some of these solutions in place, just like for wind and solar. How might you be able to just offset some of your dollars that you're spending, you know, and putting those resources into something else that you that are meaningful and impactful for you?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, living in the city with a sustainable, you know, lifestyle here, I mean, one of the choices that I've made is to continue driving my car. And Portland is a city that's so easy to get around otherwise, you know, with mass transit and with bicycles and stuff. And it's one of those things that I keep thinking, like, you know, and you're out on the farm, and so, of course, you have to still use your car to get into town. And I just keep, I mean, that's like my big, the big area where I'm kind of like, I'm like addicted to my car because it takes longer. Because every time I have used mass transit here, I don't own a bike, but every time I have used mass transit in Portland, it's not that it's inconvenient, it's that it takes longer. And I'm always running late.
Yeah.
Because I'm a busy person and I don't, you know, and so it's kind of like, it's one of those choices that I haven't quite made the jump to yet. And I don't have my aquaponics kit set up in the basement yet, which I'm looking forward to having soon.
It's coming.
I know. But, you know, so I buy my organic vegetables, and you know, which I hope are locally sourced, and I, you know, and I do all that. So, you know, I do the composting because Portland makes it really easy to do, you know, curbside composting and do the recycling with the curbside recycling and the so there's very little trash. But I have another friend who does, you know, make sure her carbon footprint is really, really small because she, you know, buys so few things that are prepackaged or wrapped. You know, she tries to buy a lot at the farmer's markets and always takes her own bags with her everywhere she goes. And she, I mean, to the point where she doesn't even use Ziploc bags anymore. She found somewhere at one of the farmer's markets somebody who makes these little cloth Ziploc bags that are reusable and washable. And getting down to like that level of mindfulness, which I find incredibly inspiring. And I, you know, as soon as I see those cloth Ziploc bags, I will buy them. But there's a market, you know, for helping us all become a little bit more mindful and sustainable on the planet, so we don't have to keep buying plastic.
Oh, I totally agree. And that's when you see those things, it gets you thinking, wow, you know, what else is possible with this? Because when you were sharing her story, it was just like, oh, my gosh, what a fun art project right there. You know, creating your own fabric Ziploc-y bags that, you know, you can wash and share with your different designs.
Right, yeah, if I was a seamstress, right, and had a sewing machine, I could make them.
Or you create a job for somebody else who would love to do that, which is also kind of a magic map there, too.
Ex- and network around that way. I mean, I would love to just, you know, if anybody wants to call in and share with us what they do, the number is 646-929-2495. We'd love to hear from you right now. If you're listening live, of course, if you're podcasting, sorry, you can't call in. We won't be here. But it would be great to get some ideas from people about what's, you know, what are some of the things that you do for sustainability? What are the special things you do? I know that I use the curbside composting religiously now, and switched over from, you know, liquid fabric softener to the dryer sheets, even though I really like the smell of the liquid because it's better for the city treatment, water treatment center.
Well, we have friends now giving us recipes to make your own detergents. So it's a fraction of the cost. It's a fraction of the cost. You can make your own. It's biodegradable, which is great because we're on a septic system out here, so we are always mindful about not having things kind of go off kilter there. Nobody likes to dig up septic. And then even with the composting, we have been starting to turn that into a way to even grow soldier fly that will feed the fish. So we're making our own organic fish food, which is awesome, out of our own food scraps.
Right. And how do you manage, so are the flies really bad on the farm, or is it not, do you never let them get to that stage?
Well, we're discovering as we're getting out and connecting in with people that even probiotics are a way to be able to help manage the decomposition process and even the smell. So we got in touch with a local person with Eden Bound Biologicals where we are able to get a probiotic brew that we can use all over the farm, which is great. I mean, helps with composting, it helps with fruit production, plant production, and we even had introduced it into the aquaponics system, which was wonderful during one of our power outages. Normally 40 minutes later, without it oxygenated air, we have dead fish. But whatever, you know, with these microbes that were in this system helps prolong the, you know, system to be able to enable the fish to live a little longer than that, so we could fix the system. So just amazing stuff that we're discovering every day. And they're just everyday people that find their passion in something that's kind of a do-it-yourself-oriented mode that, you know, whether it comes in an artistic way or scientific way, we're getting out and getting connected with them. And we're just sharing everything that we find because we're seeing value with it. And we can see how it can make a difference in everybody else's life.
Right. Yeah, now that's one of the things that I have noticed about you, Kate, is that you have this amazing ability to help people tap into their passion. And so tell me a couple of stories about connecting with people and helping them find their passion. Do you have a couple of things that jump to mind there?
I have a few. I had, you know, my background, I came out of the corporate world and did human resource and organizational development work. And for me, I have a natural knack of being able to see what makes a person come alive and how those, you know, that passion and skill set can also apply into, you know, creating a job for yourself or at least finding an area that's out there that you could apply your passion and expertise to. It's you know, I come back to the creek because that was one of my fondest memories of where we had a lot of talent out there, that amazing people that were very, very resourceful. And we had, with our five different businesses that we were operating, I needed to develop a workforce that could be skilled in all areas, not just, for example, being a short order cook, but somebody that really had good, strong customer service skills so they could answer phones and fill, you know, lodging requests or answer phishing reports, things like that. And I could see who had these skill sets and where they really shined, and then just working with them and really just empowering them to go, you can do this. And working side by side, I got to see some amazing, you know, transformative things come out. But you know, one person that definitely comes to mind is probably Aaron, so I'll pick on him. He's my now husband here at Ingenuity. And this was a lot of my inspiration for the Innovation Center was because of him. He was a self-taught person that's focused in on coming up with really unique inventions. And many people that would see his work, you know, question, well, why aren't you out there with a degree and teaching this and that, this, that, and the other? I said, well, why do you need a degree? You know, it's whatever is sitting right in front of them right there is obviously working. What does a degree have to do with them being able to critically think? And he's like, well, I can't do any of this stuff. And I said, you already are. So it's been fun for me to see, you know, people blossom over the years, including him, where they're able to step into their passion and share their gifts and knowledge with somebody else. And it's like they get past their fear because you have people that are, you know, that cheerleader kind of rooting them on. So that's what I love to do. That's my passion more than anything, is to really see, you know, how people can empower themselves to get past that fear and create what life it is that they want to live. And I'll help them put together the parts and pieces there so they can shift into that.
Right. So, and this is something that, you know, I've watched you do over and over with people and helping, you know, find kind of like that lost dream or that lost hope and kind of pull that forward and say, yes, you can do this. And connecting them up with and network with other people. How is that going to play into the Ingenuity business right now?
I've been seeing it come about more and more as folks come out here that they're really excited about this kind of do-it-yourself process. And they're really curious and, they, you know, oh my gosh, I could do this at my home. And but then they bring up the 50 billion reasons why they can't do it. And I've been kind of stumped by that, where it's just, I can clearly see that this is your passion and you'd really like to be playing over here, but what is it about all of this other stuff that's inhibiting you from taking that first step? So what I really, you know, just after doing this for about a year and just kind of watching some of these same types of reactions and interactions with people out here, what I'm starting to see is kind of a stepping stone framework for people to be able to shift into a different mindset where they are empowered and to move past that fear to try something new. Because I think we all have a sense that things are dramatically changing around us and that what worked in a, you know, traditional way for following that recipe for success isn't working anymore. And it, you know, I've seen this with doing a lot of my background work in generational studies, where I've traveled all over the nation talking to different organizations about how to get your generation, you know, all the four different generations to play nicely in the corporate sandbox. And what's universal that I'm seeing is that we just aren't seeing those same recipes work anymore for, you know, retirement or promotion. You know, we can't really count on these old ways of knowing that we're going to be taken care of. I mean, you can't count on a corporation to make sure that you're going to retire anymore. We've seen the whole emergence of a free agent mindset where I decide when I'm promoted and I may not stay with an organization. Corporate loyalty is dead. So working with that same kind of idea, I see an emergence around how to become more of a sustainability coach. And whatever sustainability you want to employ in your life, whether it's, I just would like to have more time and more freedom to do the things that I love, what small actions and steps can I take in my life to see more of that come in, to be something as simple as that? Or something, you know, for those that are really adventurous, like what Aaron and I are doing, how do you create something with, you know, family or friends that you could take on in creating, you know, a business or a passion in life to be able to shift into doing something entirely new. So that's what I see as this new space kind of emerging from my work. It's just shifting into more, thus being a coach there.
Yeah, I mean, because one of the deep conversations that we've gotten into before is actually how this empowerment for people actually can help develop the new economy of what's coming as more and more people decide that, oh yeah, I don't have to be beholden to the banks and the credit card companies and and my employer and everything, and I actually am self-determined in what I want.
Well, you see it too. And, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about what you constantly observe is this, you know, how do you change your mindset to be able to take advantage mm-hmm. of that opportunity that's sitting right in front of you? And it is about having that community of support to be able to take that first leap of faith.
Right. Yeah, well, and we were talking, too, you know, recently about this. Well, I think we've talked about so much, but, I mean, there's that shift from being that problem-focused to being outcome-focused, and what do I shifting from what I don't want, you know, to what I do want, because that's a big mind shift for a lot of people. And then there's also this other shift that happens of like, how do we shift from that certainty of I'm going to get, or what we think is a certainty of I'm going to get a paycheck once or twice a month, to being completely self-reliant on producing our own income or providing for ourselves in a way mm-hmm. that is not industrialized, mm-hmm. but it is instead entrepreneurial. And it's so funny because I haven't known, I don't think I know any entrepreneurs that have gone back once they take the leap. It looks like this big, huge cliff that they're mm-hmm. going to jump off of, but it's actually more like the Indiana Jones leap of faith, you know, where, oh, once yeah. you step out there, there's actually that invisible bridge that you
yeah,
can't see.
Exactly.
It's actually more like that, but it looks like that deep chasm.
Well, yeah, and I, you know, you figure out what you really need that really sustains mm-hmm. you, which is oftentimes coming back to the basics around community connection, family, having a sense of belonging. You know, it really is so much about the basics. It's not about a gigantic paycheck or,
yeah,
you know, success that we've traditionally defined it. It is exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And remaining focused on what you want and having that firmly fixed in your mind. Because mm-hmm. that, if you and we all occasionally do fall back to focusing on what we don't want. That's when things spiral out of control. Mm-hmm. Well, and so it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, and when I was just thinking about how you even opened up the show with all the political stuff that's going on, where it feels like I have no choice and I'm left, you know, rendered feeling powerless. I don't, you know, have any influence over this stuff in my life. And I think that's where there's a huge opportunity to discover what you do have influence over. And mm-hmm. they're the most important things, you know. How do you spend your time? Where do your resources actually go to the things that really nourish you and make you come alive? You are in control of those decisions. You decide how to spend your time. You decide how to spend your money. And there's a huge mm-hmm. amount of freedom when you recognize that you have that to be able to create the world that you want to live in for yourself.
Yeah, well, and get over that addiction to being right, the addiction to the mainstream media, addiction to, you know, the certainty, if you will. I mean, I talk about living in ministry all the time because it is fun. But I have to say 12 or 13 years ago when I decided to do that, it was kind of scary.
Yeah.
And now it's not so scary, but I've had practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's been, you know, it's taken a big step. And I just... I wish there were more, you know, as more and more people come along the journey, it does get a lot more fun. And I can sense that, you know, we're kind of getting a little bit off track from where we were talking about sustainable lifestyle. But I think the sustainable lifestyle is part of that because we, you know, we're so comfortable and set in our ways with what we know that as we start thinking about what we really want for the planet and what, you know, how we, you know, because, I mean, it feels like we're on a path towards extinction right now. And the more people I talk to about that, the more people I find in agreement with me, and I would love to find people who are not to have that conversation. But until we individually make those choices to have a sustainable lifestyle where we have a small footprint on the planet, where we are where we're in resilient local communities and we have some self-reliance on where our food comes from and how we move around our communities locally, save our jet travel for when it's necessary to go across the country, because we're not going to take that away. But you know, keep it so that we're not using up the planet faster than mm-hmm. the planet can reproduce itself.
Well, I think this really comes back down to the element of discovery. There's so much that's happening out there on a technology forefront. I'm always astounded by, you know, Aaron loves, his favorite pastime is reading patents, for those of you who don't know him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so late at night, he'll be hovered over his computer, and, honey, that looks really boring. He goes, no, it's the most exciting thing ever, and let me tell you why. And there's just these amazing people that are out there that have their gift or their passion. And, you know, I love, you know, the learning about these new things that are happening. I see them on YouTube all the time. You know, just these small, you know, garage inventors that are just really transforming the world by their unique way of how they look at things. And I'm seeing some amazing things coming out of these places that are really tackling some of our world's most pressing problems on the technology forefront. You know, from power and sustainability there, or just, you know, different ways of living. But so much of what I'm seeing that has to change is our mindset. You know, we've got mm-hmm. to reclaim our power to be able to critically think, to see how we could get curious about implementing some of these things in our life and supporting those ideas of getting out. And mm-hmm. that's really where, you know, that connection and that curiosity comes into play, because it just transforms how we look and you know, interact with everything in our world.
So if you had to do, I'm not seeing anybody lift their hand, raise their hands that's listening. So if you do want to call in, 646-929-2495, we'd love to hear from you. Anything that you want to add to this conversation? Any other thoughts that you want to throw in here about how we can make those choices or help people make that jump to sustainable living, and anything else that you're doing at Ingenuity. I mean, you and Aaron are doing a great job at being a living example of what needs to happen.
Well, I think so much of it comes back down to that mindset, and going back to my work in the corporate world, you know, there was some wonderful quote that I can't remember exactly what it said, but the basic essence of it was, is that if you don't pursue some, you know, your own dream, you know, somebody else is going to leverage you to pursue theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just something really powerful for me to kind of come back to that statement, because if you don't even know what you're passionate about, you know, how are you going to really start making a difference of knowing what to put your energy and time and resources into to make the difference that you want to see in the world? And it's curious for me, because I see a lot of people that are just so checked out. You know, they're overwhelmed, they're burdened by, you know, debt, you know, family problems, medical issues, feeling a sense of loss or helplessness around things that are going on externally. And, you know, I always sit down and ask them, well, what's one thing that you love to do? You know, what's one thing that makes you come alive? And it's interesting that, you know, if we get there, there's this whole, like, bright light that just comes on board. And to me, that's a place to start, is just feeling something again and getting connected in. It's really about understanding the relationships of when I, you know, when I make a choice or decision here, how does it radiate on out, and how does it impact everything else? So that's mm-hmm. the beauty of what I really see. You know, just these are simple projects we're doing, and, you know, they're not rocket science things. But what I watch come out of it is the people get curious and they get messy. You know, well, I've seen this on YouTube, and I bet this is the best way to do it. Well, I've seen that same thing, and this is the best way to do it. And before you know it, you're blundering along together and learning together as a community. And you walk away with the skill, and you walk away with connection.
Absolutely. And, well, you know, one thing that we haven't mentioned yet that I think is important for people to know that are listening to this for the first time is that so many of the materials that are used by Ingenuity are found materials.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like there's a lot of money out of pocket to do to do a lot of the projects. Now, the aquaponics kits are made from new materials because they need to be food grade and such. But a lot of the other things that we're talking about here are things that are actually, because Aaron is an inventor, he actually likes to reuse materials and doesn't like to pay for things unless he has to. it's part of his dedication to small footprint on the planet. So let's not manufacture new things. Let's reuse everything.
Absolutely. We find stuff all the time. In fact, just this morning he found a container off the side of the road when he was out running some errands. So I have no idea what that's going to be turned into, but it's amazing how, you know, there's just so much stuff around us, and it, you know, it is that kind of mind shift, you know, when you see something that's there that you would consider junk. How could you repurpose that and turn it into something else? And it doesn't have to cost you a lot of money by any means. And oftentimes, I mean, think about how many people you know with garages just full of stuff that's sitting there that usually ends up getting donated. And, you know, with a little bit of research, you know, you can learn about all sorts of different things, that, you know, on YouTube to figure out how to repurpose them and have fun and get your friends and family curious about what they can do.
Yeah. And that's not even talking about art, repurposing for art's sake, which a lot of people do, which is fabulous. You're actually talking about repurposing for the sake of sustainability, which is a whole other area. And it's just fabulous. You know, it's just, I mean, because we can repurpose so many things instead of putting it in a landfill or in the ocean. So much of our trash ends up in the ocean. And so when we start talking about, you know, what is my sustainable life? I mean, that's, again, one of the things I try to not buy things that are prepackaged, because it's like, what do I do with that material? I mean, Costco is my big, huge freaking example. It's like, yes, I love the prices at Costco, but they have everything encapsulated in plastic. What am I going to do with it? I hate that.
Well, we're now working on some kind of, you know, process that we can distill that down and turn it into energy. So I'll let you know when we get that
done. Farm. Okay.
That's right.
I can shop at Costco again.
That's
but
right.
Yeah, until then, kind of like, I just hate all that big pieces, those big clunky pieces of plastic. So it's a frustration of mine.
Well, and we haven't gotten completely off all of this stuff, too. I mean, there's just some stuff that it's hard to break your mind of that habit of going out to buy. But you bring up good questions. Well, now that we have it here, what do we do with it? And instead of just shoving it in the garbage can, which we don't have the luxury of, by the way. We're out there in the rural area where we have to take care of our own trash. So, you know, everything that we do, we try to be mindful of what is it that we're purchasing. If we have to go out and buy it, and how do we repurpose it? And if we can't, what can we do with it to have as least impact on the environment as possible?
Well, take a minute to talk about what you guys have to go through for trash.
Well, we don't have very much trash, because a lot of what we you know, have here out on the farm is with our vegetables and produce. That's really great. We're also able to get into a wonderful buyers club locally here that we're able to get, you know, also organic and GMO-free produce that we aren't growing, and also meat products and whatnot. So that really cuts down our trips to the grocery store of buying things that are just so easy to buy. You know, I love my potato chips like the next person, but I notice that I buy less of them because I'm using the buyers club. And the food scraps that we do have that are left over from dinner go out to the compost, which, again, create fish food, which is wonderful. But there are those products and stuff like that that come in the packaging where you can't recycle it, like styrofoam. So we have reduced, I mean, from when we were living in an urban center where we had, you know, a trash can every week that we were setting out on the side of the curb, we've reduced that to about a quarter. And keep in mind, we have, you know, several people living here as part of our family. So that's pretty amazing to just see just some small changes with integrating in a composting practice, how that just transformed.
Right.
And then save up all of our other recyclables and just make a trip, you know, once a month on down to the local recycling plant and dump it there.
Makes me glad I live where I have curbside, because it allows me to be lazier. But it's good.
You also miss out on the other things that are there to pick up, to repurpose, that you can use for other projects. I know Erin gets really excited about going down to the recycling place.
There you go. Well, and I don't know how it is in other cities, but Portland, we do have corner recycling where people put things out on the corner that they're no longer using for other people to take for free. And while some of my neighbors get irritated by it, I just think it's a fabulous recycling program.
Absolutely.
As long as it's not a stinky old couch, because nobody picks those up.
That's true.
Well, Kate, I just want to thank you so much for being our guest today here on Lunch with Loudon. It's been good to share some of this with you in a public forum so we could share it with other people. And I am sorry nobody called in today and wanted to share what their ideas are, but I know they're going to be listening and commenting on our blog and on our Facebook page, so we'll keep an eye on that. Everybody else who's listening, just a reminder that Coffee Party Radio is member supported, and we are not benefited by Citizens United, so please think about supporting us with a donation or membership. You can go to coffeepartyusa.com and check us out there. There are three other Coffee Party Radio shows, Mondays at 6 p.m. is Dan Aronson with Press One for Democracy. It starts at 6 p.m. Pacific. Tuesdays is Eric Beiler and Friends with The Middle Ground. Then Thursdays, of course, is Lunch with Loudon, where Janine and I talk at noon on Pacific time. And then Saturdays is Egberto Willis with Politics Done Right, and that starts at 10 a.m. Pacific time. I'm convinced all of you will do the appropriate translation to Eastern time. So have a great day, and coffee party on. Raw today.